Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Changing how we measure pollution. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The White House today begins the process of undoing the environmental policies of the Obama administration. So say goodbye to rules applying to power plants and coal mines, for example. But the administration would also do away with the number the government uses to measure the cost of climate change. Marketplace's Scott Tong from our sustainability desk has more on that.
If you dump trash in a river, there's a cost to society, right? Well, carbon pollution works the same way. For instance, more global warming means more droughts. And the feds try to count these society or social costs, says economist Gernot Wagner at Harvard.
We know that climate change is costly. All the U.S. social cost of carbon tries to do is attempt to quantify these costs to society.
Here's why the number matters. Every federal regulation has to tally its costs and benefits to society. And by its math, cutting one ton of CO2 emissions saves about $40. This is the presumed payoff of cleaner electricity and more efficient cars and fridges. Now, the White House wants to gut this calculation, but law professor Denise Grab at NYU says it won't be easy. A federal court upheld the concept 9 years ago.
The 2008 case found that the agency had to consider the benefits of greenhouse gas reductions, so it can't just ignore those effects.
So, today in D.C., come for the climate announcement, stay for the legal challenge. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Markets opened mixed this morning after a rather dramatic day yesterday. And to talk a little more about where Wall Street's head is at, we have Mark Lucchini. He's chief investment strategist at Janney Montgomery Scott. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
So we've clearly seen a wild ride in markets after the failure of healthcare overhaul. Are there any more shoes to drop? I mean, what's next?
Well, I think potentially there are with regard to what Donald Trump had campaigned on that the market put a big down payment on in anticipation of them being legislated. Right now, the focus seems to have turned back to corporate tax reform, which the market dearly wants. Should we see the same inability to come to land on something that they can all agree on and pass, then the market is vulnerable to another setback. The good news is that at least economically, the fundamentals remain relatively sturdy. And so as a consequence, I don't think it would result in a severe contraction in equity prices, but it'd be enough to keep investors on their heels.
You know, we've only had a rate hike just a week and a half ago, but we've already started to see Fed officials sort of walking out, giving us clues to their thinking for perhaps the next round. What are they saying?
At a minimum, they're reinforcing the message that they're likely to see economic activity and the data that would be coming in over the course of this year to affirm their stance that we're going to see another at least one, if not two more rate hikes before the end of the year, with perhaps some expectation or at least a hint that perhaps even three more rate hikes before the end of the year as opposed to fewer. And I think they're setting up the market for something that it hasn't yet awakened to.
All right, Mark Lucchini, Chief Investment Strategist at Janney Montgomery Scott. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have you been thinking about the end of days? Stocking up on emergency supplies, ready-made meals, water purifiers? Well, there are conventions for people like you. They're called prepper conventions. The American Preppers Network says membership has increased to 40,000, its highest level ever. And sales of bulk emergency supplies are up too. Reporter Tegan Wendland of WWNO has more.
Political transitions sometimes translate into people buying emergency supplies, though their reasons may vary. It happened after the elections of Presidents Reagan and Obama. And to the best of anyone's ability to track it, it's happening again now with President Trump. Bob Harris runs a company called Game Plan Experts. At his booth in a giant expo center near Baton Rouge, he's surrounded by solar lights, knives, and water filters.
One of the big items that we sell is what we call our bug-out bags, which has things like hygiene, food, water, first aid, everything that you would need for a three-day emergency.
Joe Burrows already has one of those, and he expects an emergency to last more than 3 days.
I bought these little survival lights. They can be recharged many times. And I bought a ballistic bulletproof vest.
Okay, I bought one of those solar lights too, but maybe not for the same reasons. We get a lot of hurricanes here in Louisiana. As for the bulletproof vest, Burroughs started buying emergency supplies when Obama was first elected, fearing for his gun rights. But since Trump's election, he has different worries.
Protest, rioting in the streets, civil unrest.
As a maintenance technician, he makes about $40,000, and he's investing what he can, about $1,000 a year, in emergency supplies. Robert Meyer's a professor of risk management at the Wharton School of Business. He says the more vague the threat is, the greater the fear. In the 1800s, people had vampire protection kits, and in the 50s, families built bomb shelters. But this fear of the unknown, like civil unrest and terrorism, isn't good for society as a whole.
It causes people to isolate themselves, which amplifies the isolation and basically feeds upon fear, and it just spirals out of control.
Which makes people more afraid, and maybe ultimately not prepared for real threats like natural disasters. When I asked Burroughs about what he'd do in a hurricane, he says he's not planning to evacuate. He's staying put. To him, the most important thing is not to rely on anyone else. In New Orleans, I'm Tegan Wensland for Marketplace.
Thieves have stolen the big maple leaf. The big maple leaf is a one-of-a-kind Canadian coin made out of $4 million worth of pure gold. It's almost 2 feet across, weighs 220 pounds. It was stolen from behind a bulletproof case at Berlin's Bode Museum early yesterday. And you might be picturing thieves wearing black latex bodysuits, dodging lasers and coming through the sewer system or something, but nope, they just used a ladder to climb in through a back window. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.